proposal. Senator Wergen and Commissioner Tom Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 844, as you mentioned, is the governor's capital investment proposal for this year. Essentially, it's projects that have been hanging around for a while, or emergency products that have cropped up, projects that have cropped up. It begins with the DOT exterior for $11.8 million, which prevents further deterioration of the building and replaces some obsolete structural support systems. There's property acquisition by the Department of Administration for $2.2 million because there are parcels that are available next to the Stassen building. And we all know what kind of a problem parking is in this area, and it would go a long ways towards improving that with this acquisition. Oak Park Heights prison perimeter system is $3.9 million, and that's to update things like fence, razor wire, security, and cameras and lighting so that we don't have problems with that. Oak Park Heights prison also has a ventilation system problem, which is $2.2 million. That's because there is existing mold and growing mold in the facility that needs to be dealt with in a quick way through ventilation and ductwork systems. The Minnesota Zoo has some infiltration and inflow system abatement, $1.5 million, which will reduce the use of water at the zoo due to leakage into some of the system that's going into the wastewater, a good thing to do for the zoo. The city of Stillwater has flood control phase 3. Phase 3 protects the historic downtown, which has flooded 17 times since 1940, so something needs to be done there. We all know that the Rural Finance Authority loans have already passed off from the Senate floor, so that is probably out of this bill at this point in time. And the last thing some of your committee members other than myself know a lot more about, and that's the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. There is $37.9 million to replace that 40-year-old facility, increase the seating, and increase the rink space for use in that area. That is the substance of the governor's entire bonding bill.
Hey, one thing is that the DOT building, normally that's trunk highway. Remember when I was chairing it back a few years ago, we were, of course, ultra conservative and we paid cash for everything. And then it got to the point where we started doing bonding, but now this is GO bonds, which is taking money out of the general fund and putting it into the transportation fund. And I understand why that's being done, because the transportation fund is not in good order, but it would seem like we should probably get more revenue into the Department of Transportation rather than taking money out of the general fund and paying for what is normally trunk highway.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that's also a consideration that the governor has. If you look at some of the things he's proposing for the use with the MVEST money that is now dedicated toward transportation, I would hope the full 60%. And so he's been progressive in that area, too. And I think there's the recognition that we have to do something a little bit beyond that at this point in time. And so you're seeing some things basically scattered throughout the budget that address an issue that's important to all of us, which is transportation with roads and bridges and our DOT infrastructure.
Mr. Chairman, further response to that question. We have received opposition in the past whenever we have requested trunk highway bonds. So we requested GO bonds this year in hopes that the project will actually pass. The fence around the building is extending farther and farther as the danger of panels falling off increases. That I think we are now finally at the point where we absolutely have to do it this year. So whether the committee decides GO or trunk highway bonds, we'll take it either way.
Well, I think that and the Mankato building definitely should be done this year. And I've talked to the chairman of transportation. The question is it trunk highway or is it GO? And that will be the decision we'll be making. Any other questions of the committee?
Mr. Chair, there are other persons here that can tell you more about each of the projects if you'd like, but I thought maybe the committee was pretty familiar with them, so I thought we'd keep it fairly short for you.
Yeah. I don't think Mr. Saxog is here yet, so we got a little time, I guess. Maybe Senator Metzen?
Yeah, just, this transportation money, does this stop the bleeding over there at that building? We've stuck about 60, 70 million bucks into that building, and I wonder if this is the last
The
phase of it. I think it is.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, the transportation building? We haven't done 60 million for a while.
I bet if you add it up over the years, I get some positive nods over here from the people that have been around. We put close 40 million into it. It doesn't matter. I mean, we're here today. We've got to do this.
It's the only piece of work that I'm aware of in this bonding cycle this year or next year that's going to be asked for the transportation building.
I won't pursue it, but I think I'm more right than wrong.
No,
we
put
40, 50 million into this building in the last 6 years.
No, you probably are, Senator. I just don't.
It's more of a comment than anything. I think a few of us a few years back said, let's knock it down and do it right. But we didn't do it that way, so here we are. We got to do it.
When I was chairman of the Transportation Committee, I had told the Department of Transportation to look at other alternatives. And some of it was, I think they had quite a bit of property on some intersection out there and new building and come in with that. But the chairman of the Finance Committee at that time really came down hard on them. I felt a little bad about it because I was the one that told them to look around. But, yeah, it was going to cost so much for the old building that I thought, well, maybe we should at least think about a new one. That wasn't the case, and we're way into this, and we just got to kind of finish it up, I guess. So,
Mr. Chair, that's always the problem because then you go further down the line, and with technology that it takes for the infrastructure, that becomes a problem also in old buildings. So there's always a judgment call as to whether to continue to spend something on a building or just to replace it. I think we face that a lot, and sometimes we go down a path that later on we probably shouldn't have, but we make the best decision we can at the time.
Well, also that building doesn't exactly add much to the Capitol corridor. I mean, it was a cracker box looking building, and
it still.
I think it was. You know, I think when you're going to have a 100-year building, you better make it at least look decent.
Mr. Chair, I am very thankful that Cass Gilbert and the folks in the early days of the Capitol thought we should have a good-looking Capitol building, and I think you see that today, what they were willing to invest in the infrastructure of this building, and now looking at the capital improvements that you've been talking about, which I really appreciate your insight on. You're right, the Capitol complex should be something that all of Minnesota is proud of.
Mr. Chairman, to follow up on Senator Metzen's question, as the bonding bills over the years, we get more and more local projects in them. They start pressuring us on buildings like the DOT building and a $50 to $60 to $80 rebuild of a building has to be weighed against a theater and somewhere else, you know, or a nonprofit or something. So we have a new, we got some different pressures, which then lead us to $5 million here, Senator Metzen, $10 million there. And things like that. So, I mean, it's a trend that I know you've seen, Mr. Chairman, over the last decade. I certainly have towards more local projects in our bonding bill, and that's the trade-off: ugly buildings on our state capitol grounds.
One of the requests is for the Central Corridor, $40 million, and they've kind of got it figured to make it work. Need $140 million. They say over a couple of bonding cycles, but maybe we could even make that three. But $40 million this time to get it going. The governor didn't have that. What is he opposed to the Central Corridor, or does he think the timing is such we don't need it yet, or what?
No, Senator, he's not opposed to it. He's been supportive. We just deferred anything other than an emergency, or in the case of the DAC, areas of prior agreement, big dollar amount projects to the normal bonding year so we could weigh all of our priorities. It seemed difficult to determine how much to apply to a central corridor versus some of the other priorities when you don't know what they all are at this point.
Well, I think their request was such that they wanted to show the federal government that we intend to move on it. And if there's nothing this year, it probably doesn't send that message, and it's $140 million that is being requested from the state. And I guess I thought metering it out, maybe even over three. Their request is over two bonding bills, but maybe, I don't know, maybe we can make it over three.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we're only, what, 9 months removed from the last bonding bill, so I'm assuming, I haven't seen the update on the project, but I'm assuming those bonds that we approved last year are now moving forward in their planning process. That sounds like it's metering out to me.
Yeah, okay. Any further questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have one question. Mr. Chairman, Senator, we're in Section 11, the water control structures. There's a change in. Could you explain what that section is? Is that for a specific project or various projects?
Mr. Chair,
which one is that? Just to start?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, it's a amends a provision in last year's bonding bill, and it's not applied to a specific project, but the change allows, this is the information, the change allows DNR to replace water control structures, not just in wildlife management areas, but also on public water reserves. Public water reserves are generally shallow lakes that are important to waterfowl, but aren't designated as wildlife management areas.
Okay.
I can, I'm sure somebody's here that could probably
Mr.
talk.
Chairman, Mr. Hansen, that's sufficient. I understand what it is.
Mr. Chair, Senator Langseth, I apologize. I'm sorry, Senator Fredrickson, I apologize. I was giving you the dollar amounts and not that. I should have given you the technical part of it also.
I had heard that this project, flood control project, had a cost-benefit ratio of 0.3. In other words, you only get 30% of the money back for what you pay out. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But
which project?
Mr. Chair, which project?
The Stillwater.
Oh. Mr. Chair, I am not real familiar with that project. Maybe Mr. Hansen is.
I have, Senator, I have not heard that. I can follow up and,
yeah,
and find out and report
it
back.
Isn't a lot of money, but obviously we want to have some kind of guidelines to go by when it comes to some of these
okay,
these projects. But.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up to Senator Fredrickson, the Section 11, I think of partners that have been identified apparently are Pelican Lake, Wild Rice Lake, and Bear Lake. I don't know if there may eventually be others, but it's those three, and I don't know where Wild Rice Lake or Bear Lake are, but we'll find out.
Okay, any further questions? I guess Senator Saxog is here, but Senator Sinchum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe to the commissioner, although I wouldn't expect him to probably know the answer to this unless there's somebody other. I'm sitting here looking at this transportation building and the idea of putting $12 million into it basically almost cosmetically, certainly from the standpoint of safety. It's kind of like residing your house, but, you know, it's a good idea, but, you know, long-term, do you get anything out of it? And so my question is, has anybody really kind of taken a good long-term look at that building, the standpoint of whether or not this kind of expenditure, fairly major expenditure, is worth it? You know, does the building have other needs and HVAC and electronic infrastructure and all those other things which make it the kind of building that you'd want to invest in versus the kind of building that maybe it's time for it to go and you start over and do it right. Do we do that kind of an assessment on our buildings?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sinchum, I see the Commissioner of Administration here. Perhaps she can provide enlighten the committee a little more on the study that that they have done on the building.
Well, we've put so much money in it already, I think it's the problem. It was pretty much gutted out totally from the inside, and they said it didn't fit the modern technology and so on. So we've already gone so far down that I think maybe I was visionary when I wanted to kind of, before we got started,
you always are, Senator.
Do something.
A couple of us with that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, Senator Metzen was with me.
Mr. Chair, I think I've caught the disease.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Dana Badgerow, Commissioner of Administration. Let me just give you a little background on that building. It was built in 1958 at a cost of $8 million. In the time frame of the late in the mid-90s, I'm sorry, from 1992 through 1996, there were proposals to update the building entirely. At that time, they did a cost trade-off as to the building of a new building. The estimate to build a new building was at that time $59 million. So it looked more economical, I suppose, to do an interior renovation. And so the good news is that the interior has been fully renovated at a cost, Senator Metzen, of $44 million. That interior renovation did address all life safety issues, environmental deficiencies, electrical power distribution and lighting, new mechanical and electrical systems, elevators, lighting, new windows and raised floors. So the technology needs of the building have to say, mostly been taken care of. So the last remaining issue is this dire need to replace what is an incredible risk to both property and person, that the exterior of the building is uninsured at the moment for the liability that we have as a state should one of those panels fall. And in some earlier hearings, we brought pictures and actual samples of the falling chunks, as well as pictures of the rusted out brackets that are holding those chunks. And so we are desperately hoping to get this approved. For the last three bonding cycles, it has been the Department of Administration's number one priority.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm probably still afflicted with the disease, but.
Okay, any further questions?
Oh, just one more thing, Mr. Chairman. As far as the issue of trunk highway versus general obligation bonds, the building is administered by the Department of Administration. They pay rent. It just because the Department of Transportation's in it now doesn't mean next week we could put some other department in there and move transportation out. So it doesn't just have to hold MnDOT. It's a state building administered by admin, and it could be anyone else too. So that would be an argument for general obligation bonds versus.
I believe the other $44 million was trunk highway bonds, though. It may have even been cash back there when we used to pay cash for everything. I'll bet you early on some of that money was cash out of the trunk highway fund.
I don't remember the cash days, Mr. Chairman. That must have been a
while. Well, that was the 14 years I chaired that meeting. We just paid cash for everything. Okay. See, we didn't want to push anything down on it to our grandchildren or great-grandchildren or anything like that.
It's not what you do, right?
Mr. Chair, I like your thought. I'd rather not push it off either, but I think we're in a position of having to do it in this case. But you're right. If we could pay for it, I think we should.
Okay. Any further comments? Senator Foley.
As one who worked for the highway department in those days, know a little more of the history than what you do. And it was a time when the highway department didn't have a budget that the legislature did anything with. All of the trunk highway dollars that went gas tax and other expenses went to the highway department, and they just bought what they wanted. And they essentially told the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee that that was their money and that's what they're going to do. So that building never had any legislative approval. They just built it.
Okay.
I'm not sure that they did very good. I know that they have water problems in there and a whole series of other things.
Well, that's what happens when the legislature doesn't approve of something. It just gets all fouled up. So. Okay, I believe Senator Saxhog is here now, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, did you want any kind of a motion on the bill?
We don't have no, not at this point.
Thank you.
Senator Saxhog.
Let's lay it over.
Put that on the Health and Human Service.
No, you won't.
John, you're the one that got all the money.
Take it. Whatever I need. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today I'm presenting Senate File 21. This bill will appropriate about $30 million in bonds for infrastructure needed for Itasca County to allow a proposed steel plant to be built on the western Mesaba Iron Range. With me today is former State Senator Ron Dicklich, who's the legislative liaison for Itasca County. He's going to go over the bill. If need be for questions, John Elmore, the CEO of Minnesota Steel, is with us today, too.
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the $30 million request brought forth by Senator Saxog is the money to finish the project that you were so good to give us bonding money for last year. The $30 million would complete the $53 million request we had to build a rail line, natural gas pipeline, and electrical infrastructure to serve a $1.6 plus billion dollar steel plant that would make 2.5 million tons of steel. To date, we were allowed $4 million to do some upfront work, and we've been doing the planning for the rail line, the gas line, and the electrical line, and the electrical infrastructure. And currently, we are before the STB to get environmental permitting so that we can put the rail line in. The project continues to move forward. In fact, Mr. Elmore is here. He can talk about their EIS, which was published on February 12th. And also the financing is, it goes along very well. We're very excited about this project. The money requested is, of course, to provide the public infrastructure so that this $1.6 plus billion dollar project can happen and can proceed. I do have a breakdown of the project if the committee would like to see those based on where the money we had last year and what the new money would be on. Our plans would be to totally pay for the rail line, which is approximately 23 or 24 million dollars. The gas pipeline, that is about $16 million, $7.5 million for electrical infrastructure such as substations, and then some road work as we have to shut down a county state aid highway so that the residents that live in that area will have sufficient transportation system to get out of, to be able to move move about in that area. From last year, I'd just like to remind you that this project brings in roughly about $20 million between royalties that are paid to both the school trust fund, the permanent university fund, taxes, income tax, and property taxes. That's annually. There's about a $20 million return in some form of taxation or royalties to the state of Minnesota.
Just to give you a little background on what all is involved here, I think you had mentioned something about that in the past, low silicon ore could not be used in blast furnaces, but it can be used in the new technology. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, the property that they've developed, and I can have Mr. Elmore come up explain it to you, but Butler Taconite, for instance, supplied a blast furnace, and mostly blast furnaces require about 4% silica in their ore, and the uniqueness of this ore body is that it's coarse, which means it releases the silica easily, and that is low silica to start with. In fact, at Butler Taconite, they used to have to add silica to their pellets so that they could be used in a blast furnace. An electric arc furnace, the enemy is silica. It'll destroy the lining of your electric arc furnace because the silica is acidic and the lining of the furnace is basic. And so why this project is so economically feasible here is because you have this low silica ore, and there are a lot of reasons that add to why it's economically feasible, but this is one of them, that it's easier on the furnace, and you can use it in an electric arc furnace once it's reduced. Once you put it in a reduction process that mixes it with natural gas and takes the impurities out, which are oxygen.
So this ore hasn't been used in the past because it simply didn't work, and now it's all laying there. I'd heard something about a 100-year supply or something like that.
It was used, but they had to put silica in it. But once Butler Taconite shut down, it has not been used for another blast furnace steel operation. And why it works here, what makes it so nice is that you can mine it, you can process it into taconite, you can make it into reduced iron, which is necessary to go into the furnace. It brings it from 70% iron to about 94% iron. All in one process, you're not wasting heat. Utilizes less energy than a normal process, and that's what all this adds to the low cost of the lower cost of the steel. And I can have Mr. Elmore tell you about this steel will be competitive in the world market. Actually, I've heard comments that it could be the cheapest steel in the world, but it's certainly totally competitive. So that even in low times, And to give you an example, in the year 2000, a ton of hot rolled steel was selling for $240. And of late, it's been as high as $640 a ton. So that's the fluctuation you can get in steel over the different cycles that are there. This ore, no matter what the cycle is, or this steel, no matter what the cycle is, will be competitive.
Well, it does seem like the tremendous increase in demand for steel around the world probably isn't going to diminish with some of these emerging economies around the world that are really taking a lot of it.
That's right, Mr. Chairman. And the nice thing about this for Minnesota, besides the royalties and the income that we receive, there's 700 direct employees, near 700 direct employees, and could be a spinoff of up to 2,100 employees.
Okay.
Mr. Elmore is here. He could give you an update on where the project is, as they've done a lot of work since last year, since he was here, on the financing and also the permitting process.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. As Mr. Dickler said, and as you correctly pointed out, the market for steel is very strong right now, not only in the United States but worldwide. But that's not really what drives this project, because steel markets will go big, they'll come down, as Mr. Dickler said. What drives it is really that you can be a low-cost producer through any business cycle. And so that's how come the banks will finance a project like this. What's happened since the last time we've talked is we've progressed significantly. The EIS has been published. We've submitted all of our permit applications. We abide by all the rules and regulations. And from a financing point of view, we are very close to lining up with a strategic partner to invest $400 million into the state, and to also with the banks to support the debt portion thereof. And that looks like it will be three financial institutions. So the project continues to move forward, and it's moving forward because it has a very sound basis. And it's not just because of what's happening right now within the commodity cycle. And it sustains that because you can have everything on site. So from an energy efficiency and from a low-cost position, you maintain that going forward. So we remain extremely optimistic of making this project a reality. We just continue to tell you what our milestones are. We've met every milestone we've hit that we've set out there so far. And we have very high expectations, assuming that the permits are issued mid this year, that we will break ground this year, mid this year as well.
You mentioned $400 million invested, but the total cost is much higher than that, isn't it?
Total cost is $1.6 billion.
$1.6.
Okay. That's for phase one.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When this plant is up and running, what kind of electrical need is there going to be in terms of the capacity or the system to, you know?
The total electrical need, Senator, will be approximately 450 megawatts.
So is there enough in the current system, or are we going to have electrical growth overall?
We believe that there's enough in all of our studies and everything done. The county is doing quite a bit of work on that as well. Right now in the MISO area, there's 110,000 megawatts of power and consumption of a little about 90,000, I believe. Within MAP, there is 44,000 megawatts of capacity, and their currently usage is 34,000. So there's enough capacity currently in the system. We're very fortunate in the state of Minnesota, in northern Minnesota, because of the taconite industry. It has a fairly strong grid up there to be able to support a project like that. If you came south towards the Twin Cities, it probably would not be able to support it. But I bet other people can talk about that in greater detail. But up north, especially going into Forbes and into the substations and what you have up north, the grid is strong enough to be able to support the requirement, we believe, at this point in time. And there's been a significant amount of work done on that. Obviously, electricity is critical for us to go forward.
Thank you.
Any further comments of the committee?
I'll make one last comment, Mr. Chair, if I could. We think that the community up there has done a great job of coming forward in this project. The first thing that happened is that there was a 7,000-acre land exchange between Itasca County and UPM Blandin Paper Company. That allowed us to get the land together, gather the land together that's needed for the mine, and we thank UPM Blandin and the county for doing that. again, you could be a big part of the infrastructure, and that's the second part. And the third part, of course, is the permitting, which we believe that the MPCA and the DNR have done an excellent job of working through this as quickly as they possibly can, and they continue to cooperate and help us, and we appreciate that also.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Corrin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Saxhog, so the total cost to the state would be $53 million, is that correct?
From last year and this year.
If you... Mr. Chair, Senator Corrin, yes, if you add last year and this year together, that would be the total investment.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I could just say that, you know, I don't know where else you can go and invest that amount of money and get a $1.6 billion project. I mean, it looks like a pretty good investment for the state of Minnesota, I would say. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Corrin, and you didn't count the royalties, which, you know, are owned by the state of Minnesota, they're barely hefty.
Huh?
Mr. Chairman, do you need a motion or anything?
What's that?
Do you need a motion here?
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman.
No motions yet.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxhall, what is the timing requirement of these funds? When are they required for the project?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, I may defer on this one if I don't give a good enough answer, but we're on a pretty tight timeline right now. The EIS, as we say, is published. We're looking for permitting as quickly as possible and business close by Minnesota Steel, certainly by the end of the year. And that being the case, we need to be working on this infrastructure.
Mr. Chairman, I might answer that as well. Senator, Senator Frederickson, yeah, the Minnesota Steel is projecting to be operational by August or September of 2009.
Right.
And it just the lead time to get the rail in, we need almost two building seasons because of the lay of the land. We have both extremes. We have 250-foot pits to fill in, and we have 300-foot high piles to take down. So we got about a 2 year. So we would need, it takes about a year to get the permitting. We would need to be in construction by April of next year. As soon as we could start building, as soon as we have the permits, and that's where we're projecting that we would start that process.
Okay. Any further questions? Oh, a number of the things that have been requested would have to be one-time money, and so far I haven't got a dime, but... I'm not sure whether I'll be allocated a sufficient amount or I just take a certain amount. I don't know. We'll have to see how that works out. But at this point, many of these projects would be one-time money, and they're certainly high priorities. But like I say, there's going to be a little give and take on what we do with one-time money. And with me, it'll be mostly take.
We understand, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I don't think we're going to have any more meetings on overview. There's a number of smaller projects, but I've tried to hit the larger ones. And if there's any questions about any of those other requests, and my door is open, so come and talk to me anytime you want.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. Okay. Meeting adjourned.